Save big money when you shop at Menards. Transform your home in one weekend with exterior wood stain and sealer from Dutch Boy. It provides one coat protection on decks, fences, siding, and outdoor furniture. It repels rain after just 4 hours of application. That means quicker results, saving you both time and money. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Stop by your local Menards today. Save big.
Welcome to the Liga Weekly. You know what's happened? 22nd of June. The season has finally finished. Hey! You might have thought, you might have missed this if you haven't been paying too much attention and think that the World Cup has started or something. But yes, the season has finally finished. We finally know who is in La Liga next season. And it's Malaga. That is the news. So we'll talk about Malaga. We'll talk about their victory over Almeria, the aggro. Obviously, it would finish with a load of red cards and people on the bench being booked and aggro before, aggro after. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the World Cup. We won't forget to talk about Bernardo Silva. We're not going to forget to talk about Bernardo Silva, Terry, obviously, are we? And Real Madrid's a couple of free transfer signings and a big sale of a Spanish international winger to the Premier League. So there's plenty to be chatting about. Terry is here. He's a bit bleary-eyed because now all he does is watch football for 8 hours. Actually, that's what you do anyway, isn't it?
Exactly.
Occasionally go and see the grandkids and then sit down and watch more football.
Exactly. No, thoroughly enjoy the World Cup, I have to say. It's been a pleasant surprise that the teams we expected to be easy to turn over aren't. And they're putting up a fight.
And goals.
They're decent players. They've got a good outlook on the games as well. I know Cape Verde put everybody back behind the ball against Spain, which is understandable. But in the game against Uruguay, they really had a go.
It was there was like a different team, Cape Verde, against Uruguay, because they were doing skills and stuff. Honestly, against Spain, they couldn't kick a ball to each other 10 yards away and just literally flooded the penalty area with people. And then against Uruguay, it's like guys doing like fancy turns and flicks and breaks and stuff.
Had
like
a shoot on sight policy, which was thrilling to watch.
Yeah.
And also, that was a really good game because it's a Bielsa team, isn't it, Uruguay? They're all over the place. Far too chaotic. There's no pattern structure to their game. And Cape Verde were attacking. You're thinking, it's 6-3.
Yeah.
And Uruguay were winning at the time. You're thinking, where would the Uruguay players go?
So on Bielsa, they're immediately down a cul-de-sac, which is great. Right. Yeah. I look at Uruguay and I think, what? So he's a legendary manager, Bielsa. And they all love him. And because Pep loves him. And all the top managers look at him as some kind of foundation guru of how modern football is played. Right. I loved his athletic club team the first season. Second season was a shambles.
Well, they beat Man United in Europe.
Yeah, and Man United didn't know where to look for the ball and the runners and everything else. Leeds, again, towards the end, Leeds, what's happening here? And also, they missed out on promotion one season, didn't they, where they just ran out of steam. But there were times at which they were brilliant. He's had blow-ups at clubs as well, because he's very demanding and he's a combustible character.
Yeah.
But he's done a lot of international management. It doesn't strike me as an international manager, because all of that stuff surely needs an intense amount of work. Otherwise, it's just you're just looking at it thinking, I don't know why am I supposed to think this is brilliant?
Who's playing where? Where's Valverde playing? What's his job? Right wing, centre midfield, centre forward, left back, all over the place. But it made for a really good game. But they're making hard work of that. Now they've got to get something against Spain in the last game, which we expected that to be the shootout for first and second. Uruguay are one of those that are under pressure to qualify now.
Yeah.
But it was a good game. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, and lots of goals. Lots of the big guys have come and delivered. Yeah. Salah got a goal last night, this morning, whatever. Yeah. what day is it?
Yeah.
which is great because he's been a wonderful player, Mo Salah, hasn't he, over the years? So it's great to see him scoring at a World Cup. Egypt got a win. Spain, Terry, are back. Everything's fine. Lamine Yamal scored a 40-yard wonder goal. I mean, basically, they did what it was a good win. They beat Saudi Arabia 4-0, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they blew them away. They took their chances early on. So it was vastly improved. I'm being a bit sarcastic about the perhaps a slight overreaction. But it's a good job done, isn't it?
Yeah, and I totally agree. I thought they were okay. The most important aspect of this game was the first goal, the Lamine Yamal's goal, because that opens it up. And if Saudi were going to try and emulate what Cape Verde did, the fact that Spain get the first goal in 10 minutes takes all the pressure off. Spain would have gone into the game under a lot of pressure because of the failure to beat Cape Verde, and rightly so. And going into this game, they didn't want to be half an hour in and the scoreline is still 0-0. And despite the four changes that De La Fuente made, you know, maybe we'd be looking at that game going, well, this is no different. They're no better. They're dominating possession. They're not having many attempts on goal. But opening the game up with that first goal took the pressure off of them. And it changes the narrative for Saudi Arabia. I mean, but before the first drinks break, it was three goals.
Yeah.
And I would suggest then, yeah, Lamine Yamal's goal was good. But as Roy Keane says, it's his job to get in on the far post. The technical analysis and the talk regarding the instinct of a Lamine Yamal, it was a routine goal, wasn't it? The cross was excellent, good build-up play, sharp, incisive, attacking football, and Lamine Yamal doing exactly what is expected of a winger attacking the far post. Oyarzabal's goals were good, but I must admit, it was a good performance. Excellent result, but I wasn't blown away by Spain's performance. It was an improvement from the first game. And that's what teams tend to do. The better teams tend to get better as the tournament goes on. And it was that they could coast in the second half, which they did, which at times become a little bit dull watching the game. It gave Nico Williams time to come on and get some more playing time under his belt. So everything regarding Spain was positive. I just don't think it was a performance. You look out and think they're going to win it. Although I've seen, and I don't know how people are working this out, their route to the semi-final, as it stands, looks ridiculously easy.
Okay. So
that's it's hard to imagine how people are plotting this because there's some, like Uruguay, for instance, they're meant to finish, maybe you pick it second. Spain win the group, Uruguay finished second, tussle between Cape Verde and Saudi Arabia going into the tournament. But now the way the games are panning out, people are now plotting the way through for some of these teams that look likely to win the group and their route to the final. And Spain's does look pretty comfortable, to be honest. I think they play Austria in the, allegedly that's the path. Austria in the next game, then it was the two or three games after that until they played France in the semi-final was they couldn't ask for better. So yeah. It's important they win the group. It's important their form improves. And yeah, I don't think we learnt an awful lot yesterday other than the fact they've rectified the performance they showed in the first game. And they're going to be there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
There's half a dozen teams we can pick on. I would say we've seen enough so far now to see who are the better teams, and Spain are definitely one of those.
So I'm not taking anyone. I don't think I'm taking anyone out who I would have had. I repeat myself. You don't really know who's going to win a World Cup. It is only eight games now. It used to be six, and it was seven.
Yeah.
So it's not like a league season. It's very hard to predict who's going to win a World Cup. And what we normally do is watch them win it and then say, yeah, I told you they were going to win. Rather like a pundit watching a penalty shootout. I knew he was, I could tell you the way he walked up. Yeah, okay.
I think at this stage, John, we find teams that we might think, oh, they've got a chance that we didn't maybe think before.
So that's, and I think USA would be the most impressive. But then you so it's a little bit of who they've played, because they utterly dominated against Aussie. But what they showed against Australia is a lack of quality in Australia, I think. And it'll be interesting to see USA play against one of the big nations who can play through that really energetic press that they've got.
I think they could go look, take some away. I, there's no chance USA win it. That's not going to happen. But if they get to the last eight, that'd be a remarkable achievement. And they will be tough opponents, teams like that. I think Netherlands might surprise. They were my dark horse, which I never told anybody about before going into And I thought, you know what? I look at the one problem was the goal scorer in the centre forward. That was the only position. Defenders were good. Midfield players were good. Wingers can be good. I thought they could be, you know, Ronald Koeman as manager, they could be dark horses. Brian Brobbey is the player that's stepped in and they might find their skill actually of the World Cup, where, you know, a player that didn't expect to be feature heavily might get half a dozen goals in this competition and see them into the later stages. Argentina still look. No one spoke about Argentina. I know they've only played one game.
Yeah.
But they've won the World Cup and two Copa Americas.
Oh, I've seen them listed as potential winners because they've got
all I keep seeing is England.
Yeah, well, that's because where we live, Terry, and we won one game. So there we are.
And the television we're watching is everybody's England look down. No, it's England for me. And I'm thinking, did you see France play? I think there's a top tier of France and Spain. I would include Argentina in that still.
Oh, yeah.
And then below that is the Netherlands, England, Germany, Brazil.
Yeah, although they were average, weren't they, against...
But they're still Brazil. Yeah. I know it sounds daft. So those sort of teams amongst that mix, are there any other outsiders? We talked about the USA. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. Belgium disappointed.
Oh, so really disappointed Belgium, aren't they? Teams do come strong as the tournament goes on, but Belgium, quite boring as well. And then also Courtois was excellent, wasn't he? Made a couple of absolutely cracking saves against Iran. So
that's outsiders. That we haven't seen Norway play one game. We haven't seen them play their.
Yeah, second. I mean, it's so early that loads of teams have only played. Yeah, haven't played much, have they? Yes. And Germany got away with it against Ivory Coast. Dingra should have won the game, right? Yeah, shouldn't they? And then
but England. It's interesting. I wasn't blown away by England's performance, and it was one of those where Croatia they have a generation of talent that doesn't come along very often, and we still associate that generation of talent because it's a small nation.
Yeah, yeah.
They occasionally, and they're not alone. Other nations have done it as well, but they get a generation of talent that comes through. And when you look at their team now, you think, no. I mean, I was quite sad watching Modric, to be honest.
Yeah. He's 40, and it was. Yeah. We're all saying, it's remarkable that he's playing. But if you say it's remarkable that he's playing in the World Cup at 40, then you can't go into the game with the expectations that you're getting a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
Modric.
Yeah.
Because he's not the same, is he?
I mean, he got caught in possession three times before he gave the penalty away.
And it's quite right that England would think, come on, lads, I know he's a legend, but put a lot of pressure on him because he's not going to be quick anymore.
You think back to them, and they had a remarkable period of Mandzukic.
They had two lots, in fact. That's the remarkable thing. It's 3 million people live in that country. Yeah. They had the Davor Suka generation.
Yeah.
And then that got, well, did they finish third? They got to the semi-final, the Euros, I think. And then they had that amazing mainly a midfield, wasn't it? Generation of Rakitic and Modric and
Perisic.
Yeah, yeah.
At his prime. So I'm not blown away by the fact that England I'm not sure what Croatia are now. They've got the late 30 something year olds, younger players, two or three decent players at the prime of their career, and I'm not sure they qualify, Croatia. Now, we said going into the tournament, oh, England have got Croatia, that's going to be a hard game because of what Croatia had done in the last 10, 15 years. But they weren't very good. And it does, you know, you have to put that marker down as if, Croatia have been good in the past. But I can remember really young really young, a long time ago, playing for England youth team in a couple of tournaments in Yugoslavia. And I went two successive summers. The Yugoslavian players were out of this world, honestly. The skill, the talent. I don't think they won the tournament, but the individual skill was, I'd have been 16, 17, 18, blew you away. You know, it was, oh God, is this the level we got to get to? We might have beat them 1-0 or something. But their individual levels were brilliant. And you think about Yugoslavia, who now it's broken up, and Croatia and all the others, and Serbia, is it Montenegro, is it Bosnia? All those teams that were split up from that one country. I'm not surprised that the mentality they had towards skill and technique back in the day when there was Yugoslavia, I'm not surprised that they've been able to produce players over the years.
Yeah.
But Croatia is a ageing, poor version of Croatia.
Portugal, we haven't mentioned, have we? Because they had an awful game, didn't they, against DR Congo, wasn't it? And Ronaldo played. He needs to sort out Roberto. He needs to sort out Ronaldo in some way.
He's not going to. That's I read that he is going to be his last tournament with Portugal. Roberto Martinez.
Right, yeah.
His next job is going to be managing Ronaldo's team in Saudi. So he's not going to resolve that.
Yeah, because it cries out for me, play Gonzalo Ramos, bring Ronaldo off the bench, 20 minutes, the second water break.
Yeah.
Anyway, he might prove me wrong. Right.
Very possible, I would say. Yeah.
I'm going to...
The next games are.
One moan. I think it's been really good. Once you're into the tournament, you forget about the kind of logistics and the price and stuff. So the people who are traveling, that's real for them. The logistics, the price, the rip off, and all of that. So I'm not downplaying that. And loads of people haven't gone. In fact, Henry hasn't gone. I'll give you his moans in a bit. I'm going to give you my moan that I hadn't head to head as a way of determining groups. Terrible, terrible idea, particularly in small groups.
Exactly.
I know La Liga do it. Big in a massive league. There's more of a case for it. Like Turkey are out, and yet their final game against USA could have been a classic.
Yeah,
Turkey needing to win by a couple of goals or something to go through.
Yeah,
but now they're out because they lost to the others, and they had 300 shots.
Been working out, they did. When I saw that, I thought, how are they out? They've got a game left. If they get 3 points, that might be third place. And
Yeah, especially because the third places, it would be more interesting. It'd make that whole third place thing more interesting as well. Because then you'd be thinking, oh, and they need to score a load of goals in this because they don't know where they're going to finish in that third place table.
Exactly.
But yeah, so they're out before they've had two games for Turkey. I think they're both early morning, seven o'clock kickoffs in the morning. They dominated both games, lost them both, and they're out.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Thanks. let me read you Henry's thoughts. Now, it's a few days old, so I wonder. Obviously, people are changing their mind. He normally goes. He's an England fan, for all he's an Osasuna fan. He basically had his annual leave anyway, got priced out, and stayed and watched it. Football's been good. So, again, agreeing with our view, thought it would be very negative, as we've seen in Euros, knowing three draws can get you through. But everyone seems to be playing positively. Iraq, Jordan, to name a couple. Less of an obsession with set pieces and wrestling. As you mentioned, the refereeing has been good, letting the game flow, not blowing for every bit of contact. The VAR, which he normally detests, has been really good. We had a couple of weird delays yesterday over offsides, didn't we?
I would say the last two days, VAR's got slower again.
Yeah, yeah. Funny enough, the Spain game as well. You think, well, have they brought that with them? and then the big players have turned up. Right, cons. You've got a couple of cons. Infantino in every cutaway. Yeah. Cutaways of celebrities that he doesn't want to see. Yeah. Some of the commentators. No, because Guy Mowbray had a list. He obviously had a list of celebrities. Yeah. He knew, obviously, the football ones, he'd know. He wouldn't know all the celebrities. He's not a celebrity man. But some of the commentators, absolutely no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. I'll just ignore it and hope it goes away. So, yeah.
Sometimes you hear, when it's a footballer, you're going, it's Salgado. It's Djorkaeff.
Yeah, you're screaming at this, especially because it's like sometimes there's two rows of them, and they're looking at that, and you think, "Well, hang on, Zidane's sitting there, mate. You're missing Zidane." So, yeah, it's an exposed moment for the commentators, that, I guess, isn't it? Yeah, but when it's a celeb, a rapper or something,
I need to meet this year in the Clásico.
yeah. Who did you? Oh, you had Olivia Rodrigo, didn't you? Yes. I was we're watching. Yes, I'm thinking.
Looking at
I was thinking. Does he know? That's because I think. Did he just, because you were talking about something else. Okay, did he miss that? And then they put it back on again, didn't they? And you didn't mention it again.
No, luckily Bruno, who I was working with, neither of us.
Yes.
He's significantly younger than me, and neither of
Yes.
us knew. So a
Yeah.
heads up would have been, mind you, yeah, of all the prep you do, there's you're not looking up, but celebs might be in the stadium today.
Yeah, I guess you are at this World Cup, aren't you? Yeah, that's
You
a
are now,
crucial bit of you. Yeah, and the other thing Henry doesn't like is the music blasting out in the breaks as well.
I'm
That's
fed up
because I
with
think there's a lack of singing songs, and a lack of, you haven't got the sort of like the big Senegal group and stuff like that, and the big Colombia group. And that's all a bit watered down, isn't it? And the people are spread around and not in the same numbers.
I'm fed up with Mr. Brightside. But it
Right.
works. Everyone starts singing Mr. Brightside and forgets about booing the drinks break,
Yeah,
which is
yeah,
still
yeah,
bizarre. It's
yeah.
some of the games, there's no need. One in Toronto was pouring down with rain in Chile.
Yeah.
And when that was, it really, the Canadians really went for it on that because they must be sitting there thinking, they don't need a drinks break.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
so we
Yeah.
have gone down to it's the four quarters.
Yeah, it is, they're playing four quarters, simple as
Far too
that.
long. The drinks break too long. The
Yeah.
drinks break. The drink should be on the other side of the pitch, away from the bench. So it and they have 1 minute, 90 seconds.
Yeah, it doesn't take 3 minutes to have a drink, does it? Yeah.
No,
You
and
know
it is
you.
a proper team talk now, isn't it? And
Yeah.
it's
Well,
so,
it's a timeout. It's a tactical
and
timeout,
the
3 minutes.
time for a hit single to be put on
Yeah.
the Jamie Edgley to be played.
And the other thing, now I might disagree with this a bit, and you might disagree. The American grounds, while impressive in their size and facilities, are huge, ugly blocks of concrete. Sorry if this offends NFL fan Terry.
Yeah, they're not. They are. They might not be ideal for soccer, football, but they are pretty impressive. And I mean, the Seattle one's an interesting one, isn't it? Are you looking? You've got that triangle stand behind the goal, and you're thinking that's a waste of. You know, could get another 20,000 people in that, but it was left specifically so you could see the Seattle skyline behind it.
Right,
But
okay.
when you look at it, you go, oh, the skyscrapers and everything right behind the stand. It does look different. The one in there,
I generally like them
Dallas
actually.
Cowboys one,
Yeah.
Jerry's
Because
ridiculous.
they're slightly different. They're not just like a bowl that's been dropped on there, like poof, like that's how we do it, poof, in it goes. They're quite different from each other. I mean, I can't remember which one is in which place, but right, so thank you.
No,
We'll hear more from Henry later on the subject of
I'm
Osasuna.
surprised they've been so successful at adapting to soccer.
Yeah.
I don't look at them now. Oh, that's an NFL stadium. There is one, I think, where they have to, in the NFL, they have to have the first tier of seats has to be about 15 foot off the ground.
Yeah, but I
So
like
they're
that.
not. That's because in the NFL, you've got 50 blokes, big blokes standing in front of you. So
You've
if
got
you
like
were
a
in the first
mass of people in an
row,
NFL game. I don't think, are there no stewards to come and who are all these people? Can I just wander in and start stand at the side of the pitch in an
55
NFL game?
players and coaches and cameramen and
People throwing hot
everything
dogs and stuff like that, and a bloke with a
else.
sandwich board telling her that the end of the world is nigh, and just wandering across.
So they have to therefore put this first tier of seats higher so you don't have supporters going, oh, can you sit down?
Yeah, but I agree with that. Because I
Totally.
went to the World Cup. It was funnily enough, Spain starting badly, losing to Switzerland, and we were sitting the front row, and they brought in these big advertising, the big electronic advertising hoardings, but they were too big. So in the front row, you couldn't see the touchline, and Jesus Navas was playing, and you could see his whole body, but you couldn't see his feet. So he's like dancing. It just looks like he's dancing away. But you couldn't see the footwork that he was doing. I guess he was doing, I still don't know. I guess he was doing step overs and stuff. But I couldn't tell you. So when you see, they should be elevated. I think that's good. Not quite as high. I mean, they're massively elevated, some of those. But I'm all for a meter or two
I think
to make
Spurs one
sure that
is
you look down.
interesting. how Spurs have done this when they've got the normal football soccer stadium. So if you're in the first row at the Tottenham Stadium, you're in the normal position. When the NFL is played, the playing surface is dropped.
Right, yeah.
So that's lower than the soccer, so football. I keep saying soccer.
No, I don't mind people saying soccer. If you're American, you can say soccer. I don't mind that.
Yeah. But describing the two difference, otherwise can say football and football.
Yeah.
So that's how Spurs have, and I'm assuming Real Madrid have got similar as well.
Yeah.
But I've been pleasantly surprised how the NFL stadiums have adapted to playing football in the World Cup.
I was, along with many people, amused by Donald Trump realising when he said, you know, in that sort of slightly rambling style, where he said, you know, think about it. That game should be called football, shouldn't it? Because they kick it with their feet. Yeah, yes. The rest of the world said, yes, well, yes. You figured it out, finally. Yes, the game where they kick it with the feet is the one called football, yes.
And we got Pochettino's been an interesting response, isn't he? America look a good team.
Yeah.
Prepared well. He's got a new look on the touchline, which people said he looked like Russell Crowe and he was rolling around. They're going in the right direction, America. Japan are great to watch. Really, I've always enjoyed watching them.
Again, I know we're sort of rambling here, but technical skill of Japanese players is tremendous, isn't it? Again, like you were saying, the old Yugoslavia obviously had some kind of, I don't know, there must be some coaching goes on from young ages where they focus on technical skills. Japanese players. So, yeah. Right, we need to talk about a bit of La Liga. That'll do us for the World Cup for now, I think, won't it?
Yes.
A couple of transfers. Oh, let's do Malaga. Because where the season is finally finished. Malaga are back, which is great. So they won at Almeria. It kicked off for good and for bad towards the end. I mean, we'll briefly say again, it's insane that it's finishing at this time and that they feel the need for a two-legged tie and when the World Cup's already well underway and stuff. But here we are. They tell us about the game, Terry, and then tell us a bit about the Malaga team. So, young team, isn't it?
Yeah, they had a new manager coming in November and that avoiding relegation was the remit and they've ended up getting to the playoffs, winning the playoffs. I kind of forgot, and I'm not sure if it's the normal thing or not, that if it was a draw, Almeria, there would be no extra time. Almeria would have gone up because of their advantageous position in the second division this season.
Yeah.
Which kind of gave it a weird feel because I didn't realise, I forgot. I was thinking there was a stage in the game where I couldn't see a goal coming for either team. And then I heard the mention from the commentary team, Phil and Paul Giblin, that Almeria and they kind of reflected in their play. They were playing safe. They were running the clock down with half an hour to go. They weren't being ambitious. And they've scored lots of goals this season, Almeria. And they've got a lot. They had a lot more players we all would recognise from La Liga days. And Malaga were young, vibrant, fantastic support. Disappointed that they only got the 0-0 at home. But they were the team, definitely. I thought they deserved to win. And it's brilliant to see, as I say, the manager. I haven't done my prep yet for next season, but I sat there and just watched it and enjoyed it. And it's, I think it's absolutely fabulous. And the response on social media to Racing winning it, Depor coming up, and then Malaga going up, Jose Mourinho coming back to Real Madrid. It has a real retro vibe.
Retro weekend, obviously, caught on, didn't it?
Even the stadiums and the fans and stuff. That I'm looking at Rosaleda for Malaga, the Riazor for Depor, and what's that, the Racing Stadium called? El Sardinero.
Yeah, well done.
Bring back the memories of when we were working together on Sky. And it'd be interesting to see when Jose comes back where he's thinking, is Nikola Zigic still playing at Racing? Is Baderon, is he still knocking about? And who's playing at Malaga these days? Is Duda still taking the free kicks and corners? But it's what we've always talked about the teams that get promoted. We've had some lovely stories, you know, Huesca coming up and Eibar coming up and teams like that. But we want those teams like Malaga, Racing and Depor, not just because they're old names that we've enjoyed watching in the past. The stadiums will be full up.
Oh, yeah, Malaga, I've got 25,000 season ticket holders.
Yeah, Malik Depot were getting 30,000 in the third tier.
Yeah.
Because everybody pulling together to try and rescue a club that had plummeted. Racing had plummeted. Malaga had plummeted. All three have had really tough times. Different owners at different clubs. Malaga has somehow kept the same owner and found their way back. Malaga and Depor getting promoted together, having a U in the second, then coming back up together as well. It's a brilliant story. I'm really, really looking forward to these three being back in La Liga next season. And Malaga are really interesting.
They're quite well set, aren't they? Because they've been in administration, haven't they? And so the administrator basically cleared the debts. So they come up debt free, effectively, and able therefore to spend their TV windfall. So they've got some financial leeway, but they don't really need to because their players are quite young. It's quite a healthy situation for them to go into.
I think one player cost some money, and they said he's the only player that's cost any money in 8 seasons for Malaga.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't a huge sum of money, of course, but it is interesting. Do you know what I've been keeping an eye on the press and stuff in the build up to the game because I wasn't sure when the fixture actually was. And I don't know why they had 6 days between the first and the second league.
Mm.
And I don't even know why there's 2 leagues. Why not just have a 1 league playoff? And do you know what I never saw mentioned once was the value of the match. It wasn't the £150 million game.
Yeah,
I don't even know what it's worth. It hasn't been mentioned. It was purely sporting. Whereas we get in the championship playoff, this is it goes up. What is it now?
200 mil. Yeah.
200 mil.
Yeah.
I never saw that. I don't know. So if anyone's got any idea of what the value of that game is, and it's not a one-off, it's 2 legs, but the value of, you know, winning the playoff, going into La Liga, I don't know what the finances. You're talking about Malaga and their finances, same with Depor, same with Racing. I don't know what that game was worth.
That 200 mil was used as an argument why Southampton shouldn't be penalised. It's, oh, you can't penalise them. That game's worth 200 million.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why they cheated in order to win it. Aspect
disappears, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's so much money riding on it. So I'd be interested to find out what that game is worth to the winner.
Yes. Let's have a... So Malaga are up. We'll see how they get on. Well, one thing that did occur to me, the transfer window, I know it's open, but it hasn't really got going, has it? And it was a weird one last year, wasn't it? Because of the World Club Cup was in this
in the middle
of time.
Yeah.
So in terms of how the pecking order works, there's a lot of it, you wait for the big clubs to do their business, which injects a load of money somewhere else, doesn't it, who they buy from.
Yeah.
And then that gets it all going. And so there are times at which everyone's sort of waiting for a big deal or two to happen. And then you get this little sort of waterfall of deals that then happen. So in a sense, it might not be the worst for Malaga to go up in the World Cup yet, because it's been quite a quiet year in terms of some of the big deals. And then they come along with a reasonable amount of money to spend. We need to talk about one or two of the deals that have happened. The long-awaited conversation about Bernardo Silva. Do you like Bernardo Silva as a signing for Real Madrid, Terry?
I do. I'm interested to see how it works.
Yeah.
And again, similar to what I said about Denzel Dumfries being Jose's choice.
Yeah.
Suggests to me that he's probably going to be the right back. And also his form has been good in the World Cup ahead of Trent Alexander-Arnold. I have no doubt that Jose Mourinho wanted Bernardo Silva. So I expect him to have a place in the team. Now the interesting point is, where is he going to play? At whose expense? So it's going to be interesting to see. It's been too easy to throw away and go, well, Gundogan didn't do it at Barcelona. He came at the end of a long career at Man City. Brilliant player, but his legs are gone. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. There's an element that maybe some people might suggest the same is possible with Bernardo Silva. But there's no doubt he's officially, he has been a super player for Man City. And had games this year where he was still excellent and outstanding. Yeah. So yeah. I don't think he's passed it. And I think it's a worthwhile signing for Real Madrid on a free transfer. But where they're going to fit him in, that's going to be the interesting aspect.
Yeah, and if anyone else is going from those midfield options. And Konate. So where does Konate go into the pecking order of other defenders? For a couple of years ago, they ran out of defenders. They were just getting anyone to play in defence. Now they've got a bit of a surfeit of centre-backs.
Militao, I think, is number one choice, but unfortunately for him, he's barely been fit for three seasons. So I think he's the best. Then I believe it's going to be Konate or Housen.
Right.
I don't know how that's going to go. I think the Konate one was kind of done before Jose took over, so he probably had to sanction it somewhere along the line in the anticipation that Florentino Perez won the election. Is the attraction because he's free? His form wasn't good last season for Liverpool.
He is mistake prone. Yeah,
it has been in the past. So I get why they're signing him and a free. Dumfries, I think, is a fabulous sign. And that was pre-World Cup. His form was good in the game it's been good in the World Cup. But going into the World Cup, he's been a really, really good player. So I think that's a really good signing as well. And I think he'd be first choice. Right back.
Yeah.
And Cucurella, I'm still, baffled as to why.
Why they even need a left back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And giving up on Carreras after one season.
Yeah, having paid a lot of money for him.
Similar amount as they've just paid for Cucurella. It's quite unusual for a team to spend that much money on two players in that position. Yeah, midfielders and attackers, I get, and wingers, match winners. But a team to buy 100 million euros worth in two summers on the same position. And Ferlinmondi is still going to be there. And they talk about Fran Garcia going to Betis. So I think that would be a good signing for Real Betis.
Yeah. I'm seeing Grimaldo linked to Atletico for that 10 to 13 million euros. That's all. Well, hang on. They just paid 50 million for Cucurella. Yeah. Grimaldo is Spain's other left back.
It'd be good to see him in Spanish football. That'd be very
since he was a kid at Barcelona. Yeah.
That'd be good to see him in Spanish football. Left back, trying to think, is that a problem position for... No, Rijkaard really looks...
Yeah, he had a good season, didn't he? Yeah.
And Hansko can play there. Be interesting.
Yeah. Okay. And also Lee Kang-in as well, linked with Atletico. He's a clever player, isn't he? Talented.
Yeah, exciting to watch.
Yeah.
Been tough for him at PSG. Always was going to be, to be honest. It's not easy to get in that team.
Yeah.
But he's contributed to the he's always on the bench and comes off the bench on a lot of occasions. So that'd be an interesting signing from Atletico. Everything depends on Julian Alvarez, doesn't it? If he's going to be there, if he's not. They've already lost Griezmann. Soloff has made one or two mentions, or not him personally, but that it might be time for him to go and play somewhere else on a regular basis. Be interesting to see whether he thinks Griezmann leaving improves that, and maybe Julian Alvarez, if he leaves, whether it... So it's a wait and see for Soloff, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of waiting and seeing, isn't there?
Yeah. And also you've got to bear up injuries as well in this World Cup. There's no point in buying someone now and then they pick up an injury, bad injury in the World Cup. Yeah. So I think there is that element of let's get this competition over with. Let's see when his team are knocked out or how far they go. And if he's 100% fit, then we'll do the deal.
Unless it's for Victor Munoz, who has left Osasuna and he's gone to play for, drumroll, Liverpool. Because he was. We've got a message from Henry. I'll just read you that in a bit. It's about the managerial. In it, it's a few days old, because he says they're losing him to Newcastle, which was the story at the time. And then Liverpool have come in. 40 million euro clause. Is it worth it? Is he a good
sign? I don't know. But he was 5 million last summer.
Yeah.
So anyone knew their stuff, knew what they were doing, they could have got him for that last summer.
Yeah.
But of course, then they wait and then see him play on a regular basis. That's where player recruitment lets the people involved let themselves down. If they genuinely believe that he is, a year later, that he's worth that much money, why didn't they have the intel to buy him a year ago instead of Osasuna? All right, they might not have got him for 5 million because you're buying him from Real Madrid and there would be a Premier League tax and stuff like that. But the problem is now, John, that these youngsters do appear and look full of promise and potential, and people panic that they're going to miss out. So it's, I thought he was good this season, but you look at him, we didn't judge him this season on a 40 million euro player. We judged him as a, at the start of the season, that's the boy at Real Madrid who missed the chance in the Clásico. That'd be interesting to see how he does at Osasuna. Is he going to be one of these young ones? And I thought he did okay. I wasn't blown away by him. I thought in his first season, good progress. Obvious attraction is his pace. Osasuna didn't do particularly well. I thought he was okay. And I look at him as a possible good player in the future. But teams don't have that luxury now of saying, let's give it another year. See how he does this in his second season at Osasuna. But people come in and Newcastle come in and New Liverpool and suddenly think, we might be missing something here. Iraola might know more about him than we do. The most managers in the Premier League that don't have La Liga experience and not keeping an eye on the league and decided it was worth the money. So it's a big jump. I think it was 6 goals in his first season at Osasuna. It was decent progression. But just the way, Yandy Amandi is the other one that was at Leganés for 5 minutes and went for 20 million to RB. Where's he gone to in Germany? And they're talking 100 million.
Yeah.
And was sold for 20 million, I thought, how did that happen? He's only been there half a season.
Yeah.
But it's paid off. And I think that's what, maybe not Liverpool buying Munoz. They're not looking at a payoff in the future. But it's definitely a gamble.
Yeah. And in terms of Osasuna, it doesn't make Osasuna rich, does it? Because they get it's the 40 million fee, but 50% of it, so 20 million, goes to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Because of the clause. I'd looked in, I was thinking, well, why didn't they just buy him? Because they had a buyback at 8 mil.
Yeah.
And it's basically those buybacks are not what they were. Remember that in the past, Alvaro Negredo would be one where they had a buyback and they buy a player and then immediately sell him. So they get the buyback.
Diaz was another one, wasn't
he? Yeah. Because of the registration rules, it makes you if you buy a player back, you have to give him a contract and then he has to go on your books towards your allowance. So it makes it just makes it complicated. So they obviously looked at that and thought, we'll just take the 20 mil rather than paying the 8 mil registering him.
And it's a decent deal for Osasuna.
Yeah.
They've made a 15 million profit in a season. And I'm not saying it's easy to replace him, but they will be able to. It's not as if he's been there 3 years and scored 30 goals and over that course of 3 years and thinking, how are we going to replace this? We had him for 5 minutes. He helped keep us up. But we'll move on.
So Henry's thoughts on the new boss, Ramis at Osasuna, since you asked, Terry. Underwhelmed, feels a cheap option, he says. I can't help think there must be a reason that he's never managed in the top flight in his whole career at his age. Well, he's 55, I think, isn't he?
Yeah.
Nothing jumps out of his CV. Apparently his success at Burgos was based on being hard to beat, which does not get the pulse racing. Hope to be proven wrong, but slightly worried about a cycle coming to an end with regards to a core group of players that needs freshening up a bit. And then he says, losing Munoz, as I say, to Newcastle when he wrote this message, means there is very little stardust in their squad.
He knows better than most of us. And I have the same lines of thought, to be honest. And Osasuna are a club that really made good progress in recent seasons. The stadium, the connection between the fans and the team. It would be a shame if they become dour. And they've been dour in the past. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the kind of characteristics you think about Osasuna and it's sort of my 20 years of working in Spanish football. Occasionally, they can be down and be hard to beat. But I thought they were going a little bit away from that now. So it'd be interesting to see next season if they are down, if it gets some results, if it gets the blood flowing quicker for the fans. Results, that'd be a one end though. So, it'd be interesting. Osasuna shouldn't be, they have a squad that's outsiders for Europe. They shouldn't be relegation candidates, despite the fact Munoz has left. As I say, he's only left 5 minutes, so it's not be a massive miss.
Yeah. Right. Stay hydrated, everybody. I think you're obliged to say that in podcast world. Right. Enjoy the football, everybody. Get some sleep at some point, surely. And I woke up
in the middle of the night. I was tossing and turning before I went to bed, before Argentina played. I thought, I've done like three games tonight. I'm, it's early in the tournament. Save it for the big games. And I woke up at that 20 minutes into the game. I couldn't sleep. It was on my mind. And I woke up, looked at the clock, and I thought, it's 20 past three. Get up and watch it. So I'm hoping, luckily, I'm sure there are people that are following everything.
And the rest of that story is that your poor wife had to get up and watch it with you.
I switched the telly on in the bedroom and she was quite happy to watch it the rest of the first half and the second half. But I'm sure they've made it quite pleasant for us in the fact that there hasn't been many big games, is there? Would we have this New Zealand, Egypt at 5 o'clock in the morning or something? So it's going to be interesting to see. Fortunately, I'm heading out to the States, not for work. I could pretend like a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to Florida on holiday. I could sit on the beach and do a bit to YouTube or X and go, well, I'm out here in the States. And
my contacts. Yes.
contacts. And then I'm heading up to New York to visit my daughter and her family. So I could easily do that in New York, walk around the streets in New York, picking out venues and going, oh, here we are in New York. And
you need to get a big banner behind the ITV studio. Hire yourself a boat and float down the river.
So I'm going to be blessed in the fact that a lot of the games I'm going to be able to watch now are at sensible kickoff times. Yeah. So I won't be able to get up in the morning. I can watch them late at night. But I know a lot of people. But they made it kind, haven't they, with like the New Zealand, Egypt.
I don't mind it, actually. The Turkey is the one that I feel sorry for because their kickoff times have been terrible. Yeah. And they're out before they've had one in their evening. You know,
I think Argentina's been the only game, and it was probably because of Messi. Mm. The Argentina game, because I was intrigued. Is this old guy past it yet? He switched it on. He did what I think when I looked at the clock, I looked at the score. I thought, he bloody scored, but he scored again. Switch it on, and then the second and the third go in. And it took me a while to think, why is it then?
The
goalkeeper, obviously, his son was in goal. So, but I've been fortunate that I've watched all the daytime ones and the evening ones and the late night ones, but I've given up on the middle of the night, apart from Argentina.
Yeah. Right then. So we're relocating the pod, huge expense, to we're going stateside next month.
I'll still be taking my mic.
Yes, yes. And so we'll hear from Terry from the United States, from his World Cup base, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.